No.
What's your least favorite scary movie?
Tony's little boy who lives in my mouth. Welcome to What's Your Least Favorite Scary Movie, the podcast where we talk about the good, the bad, the ugly, and the absurd, and all of our favorite
and least favorite
scary movies.
Because we believe every horror movie rightfully has its fan base.
Even if we don't always get it.
My name is Travis.
My name is Jesse, and I 100% guarantee Travis thought I was going to do Red Room, Red Room as the opener.
I thought it was either going to be that or All Work and No Play Makes Jack a Dull Boy.
Homer something something.
Or that. I thought it was going to be that because you've been saying that pretty much the whole weekend too. So
I also want everybody to know, because normally I do the absurd cover art requests on air, and I came up with this one as we were watching the movie last night.
She made me pause the movie to tell me this idea.
So I was laughing so hard at my own thought process. Mm. But basically what I requested was that Travis draw Danny Torrance as the chosen one and make Tonguey Tony.
For those who aren't aware, the chosen one is from a kung fu chosen parody one. Movie called Kung Pao, Enter the Fist. So yeah, I don't know, some people will get it, some people won't. I like the idea.
Yeah, so I want people to know that request came right off the top. And also, if they're like, what the fuck is this cover art?
Yeah, like, know. This is The Shining and there's this kid with his tongue sticking out. Yeah, it doesn't make sense, but yeah, we're talking about The Shining today, guys. And we have a guest joining us here shortly, too. Yeah. But
author
we figured
Erica Wirth. We'll give her a chance to introduce herself and her most recent publication here shortly. But we wanted to go ahead and get some announcements and poll results out of the way.
We don't have any poll results because we were irresponsible over the holiday weekend and forgot.
So we are recording things way out of order, and it's very confusing for us. We are recording this and then later tonight we're going to record our To Be or Not To Be. It's currently Saturday.
Yeah.
So we're going to try and get To Be or Not To Be ready to be uploaded for Sunday morning.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, Travis doesn't know yet. I haven't told him what movie it's going to be. But if you're listening to it now, as long as nothing changes, we should be covering The Final Rose.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Oh my God, that movie, the fucking Bachelor movie.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, well, I'm ready. I'm ready. Yeah.
I'd say that it's seasonal in that Christmas movies have very forced romance storylines, and
that's a forced connection.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, there you go. Yeah, I see the connection.
It's a stretch. It's a stretch.
This one right here is fairly seasonal because it's like a snowy movie.
Yeah.
So it's not like Christmassy or anything like that, but it kind of is good at getting it in that winter type.
Yeah,
of
no.
Feel.
Well, I mean, all of the Red Room occurs during late November, early December. So So it's a thing.
All right. Well, I guess that's our announcements then.
Yes. Also, for patrons in our budget level tier, we should have had another release over the weekend as well. Just a lot of recording for us this weekend.
Yeah.
But where we talked about the unrated version of Stay Alive. Yeah. Again, we haven't recorded that yet. So we're all out of sorts. But that's what you get for $10 a month is a bonus episode. Who knows what it's going to be about? I did a stupid game with Travis and he's potentially thinking about a stupid game with me.
Yeah. And maybe like going over some movies that we kind of glossed over before. Like, I kind of want to talk about Terrifier.
Yeah, I'd like to go through Terrifier. The interview with David Howard Thornton was great, but I'd also love to actually
talk about the movie.
Yeah.
We just kind of talked about David and his experience with it, basically. So, yeah. I don't know. That's kind of like where we can just get experimental and have a bunch of fun stuff.
Yeah.
I'm really excited to go back to the Muniz era, though.
Yes, definitely. Yes. Definitely. But if you want to be a patron, you can join the ranks of our pals, Eric and Phoebe of Shaken Not Scared, Joe, or Amber, our newest patron. Welcome, Amber. Yay.
Oh, and you get to, by this point, I'm sure we'll have put up a poll for like input.
Oh, yeah, if you're on the budget level tier, you also get poll for input because December has a lot of Thursdays in it.
Yeah, we got five movies. Five movies in December. Yeah. You get to choose one.
Do y'all remember?
Yeah. Okay. So no polls. That's pretty much it. All right. Now it is time for us to introduce our guest.
Yes. All right. All right, and we would like to welcome our guest, Erica Wirth. Hi, Erica.
Hello.
Hi there. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, thank you for joining us. Frequent guest of the show, Robert Atone, reached out to us, and he knew of another author who likes talking movies, likes talking spooky stuff. Recommended having you on as a guest.
Yes.
We reached out to you and you suggested The Shining.
Yeah. So I go by Erica T. Wirth. And if you want me to introduce myself and my novel here.
Absolutely.
And why I picked The Shining.
Please, please.
Cool. I'm Indigenous. I'm an Indigenous horror novel. And that's essentially what the novel is, an Indigenous horror novel. It's basically about a woman named Carrie, who's an urban Indian, who despises her mother, but loves heavy metal and loves horror, specifically Stephen King and specifically Megadeth.
Mm. Oh my God.
And she despises her mother because she thinks that her mother abandoned her when she was 2 days old. But, you know, when her like sweet, well-intentioned white cousin Debbie finds this ancient bracelet of her mother's and the main character touches it, this ghost, her mother's ghost, starts haunting her. And so does this sort of evil Bigfoot character. And she decides, you know what, maybe I do have to find out what happened to my mother.
Interesting.
That sounds really interesting.
Yeah. It's kind of funny, too, because we had Robert on like a couple weeks ago, and he has like a Bigfoot book that he discussed with us, too. So not that that's like all that yours is about, but I think it's kind of funny that there's similarities right there.
Yeah, I was on the Talking Scared podcast, and Neil was essentially asking about Bigfoot. And I think he didn't realize, and a lot of people don't realize, Bigfoot is an entirely indigenous creature. I don't believe there are any indigenous, non-indigenous, as a Native American, myths of Bigfoot outside of America, which is, you know, at the same time kind of disconcerting, but also kind of wonderful that he's that powerful.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that either.
I didn't either, no.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
All right. And you said the novel's called White Horse, right?
That's right. It's named after an infamous bar in Denver that has just closed, a famous bar in Denver that's just closed, where it's been open since 1926. And, you know, every Native I know, for a long time, it was a Native bar. And I've been there many times. And every Native I know has like amazing, just wild stories about the bar. And so in some ways, it's the most quintessential Denver Indian institution, or at least was up until just maybe 6 months ago.
Okay, all right. And cool. From the description, I can definitely see why you would choose The Shining as a kind of a companion movie to be on here and talk about.
Oh, absolutely. Basically, you know, I, like the main character, was like a Stephen King kid, and I read everything by him. And what was funny is I was at a reading in Seattle recently, and someone said that my book was so scary, they threw it across the room. And I was like, I have unlocked, you know, my fullest potential, because... exactly what I did to, I think, The Stand when I was about 13. And so I was like, this is rad. But yeah, Carrie, the main character, she loves Stephen King. She loves The Shining. That's her like comfort movie. And so it's part of her own personal mythology. And so the journey that she ends up on, several chapters take place in the Overlook, or, you know, better, you know, more, or as it's known in the real world, the Stanley Hotel.
Yeah.
So, and it's this great mythology around the Stanley Hotel for a couple chapters.
Yeah, Jesse revealed to me last night that was like an actual place that you could stay.
Yeah, we were watching and I was like, we should go stay there someday. And he was like, what?
I mean, we just talked about The Changeling. They made that whole house like, it was like nothing. It was just like the front of a house and then like a modern house behind it. I didn't know what kind of camera tricks they had going on with this thing, you know?
Nope, it's real.
Yeah. Yeah, from what I understand. So it's modeled after the Stanley in the book, right? Because that's where King stayed and that's where he had these weird visions. But Kubrick, right, in the movie, I understand King doesn't like it.
Yeah.
And I think I have my own little pet theories as to why. But Kubrick, right, he filmed it in England. He based it off of a hotel in Oregon somewhere. And it's all just built for that particular movie, right? It's not shined. It was not filmed at the Stanley.
Yeah.
But oddly enough, Dumb and Dumber was.
Really? Wow.
I did not know that last little bit.
You are welcome.
Okay, cool. Well, we're getting started early with the fun facts here.
All right,
well.
Leads us nicely into the background.
Yeah, and I've got like book throwing in the fun facts too. So that'll also bleed over into this. Yeah. So yeah, we're talking about The Shining. This movie came out June 13th, 1980. So that leads me to believe this is a Friday the 13th movie. We watched this on HBO Max. That's currently the only place you can stream it for now. Yes. But if you do want to rent it, you can rent it from Apple TV, Amazon, YouTube, Vudu, all that. $3.99.
And once again, we always have to give the disclaimer that we are recording the first of the month's episode at the end of the last month. So who knows where the availability will change come December.
Yeah. So by the time this episode releases, it could be somewhere else. So yeah, just be on the lookout. But you can rent it for $4. It's not much.
That's, you know, cost per minute. This is a long movie. It's a good deal.
You doing this again? Cost per minute.
Cost per minute, yeah.
Okay, so this is based on a novel by Stephen King, obviously, but the screenplay is written by Stanley Kubrick and Diane Johnson.
Okay.
Movie is directed by Stanley Kubrick.
Indeed it is.
Music by Wendy Carlos and Rachel Elkind, and special effects makeup by Nick Molly.
Okay.
Cast for this bad boy.
Okay.
Very small cast that I'm going to list here. We have Jack Nicholson plays Jack Torrance. Shelley Duvall plays Wendy Torrance. Danny Lloyd plays Danny Torrance. Scatman Crothers plays Dick Halloran. But his real name is Benjamin Sherman Crothers.
Yes.
I was very thrown off whenever I saw Scatman. I was like, what the fuck? But you know, I wanted to like dive a little bit deep in there and see if I could find his real name.
Yeah, I assumed that was some sort of a stage name.
Oh,
but
yeah,
then definitely. I also had like the song running through my head after
Scatman. Yeah, I did too. Yeah. I was like, is that him? Like, what if he did that song? all right, so Erica, we do a little game on here, budget or bugthead. So basically, do
you think that this, or low budget?
Yeah, do you think it's high budget or low budget movie?
Huh, it looks like a high budget. But then again, it pretty much only takes place in one place, so maybe it's low.
Yeah, so a single location would usually indicate that it's a low budget movie. But I think if you have somebody like Kubrick,
yeah, I was gonna say,
is very meticulous with a lot of his things, it's he kind of drives the budget up. So this is a budget movie.
Okay,
we discussed this with the Changeling. So, but the budget for this was $19 million.
Wow.
Yeah, our cutoff for budget is $10 million. Yeah. So, yeah, it's a little bit up there.
Yeah.
This thing opened $622,000.
Oh, wow.
Very low opening weekend, ooh, right? Somehow it managed to find its way, though. Made $47 million overall worldwide gross.
Okay.
Huh. IMDb score, 8.4 out
holy
of 10.
Cow, that might be our highest IMDb score.
For now, it is, yeah. I don't think anything stopped that yet.
Okay.
All right, I pulled three movies
from 1980.
Already did 1980 like 2 weeks ago, so I had to find three more movies here, and I'm kind of mad at myself for choosing one of them because I could have done a whole thing here because I don't have any theme for these movies.
Okay,
here. I just kind of picked some.
You didn't pick The Changeling for this one, did you?
No, I didn't.
Okay, okay. I wouldn't put it past you because you picked The Shining for Changeling.
I know. I never regret doing that because I was like, fuck, I'm gonna be talking about this movie in 2 weeks anyway. So, no. First off, I've got Prom Night. Yeah, so we got Jamie Lee Curtis, first off. That movie came out July 18th. Budget, $1.5 million.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
Oh.
It grossed $14
million. Okay.
So it didn't do too... Like, okay, it did okay.
That's
I think
a good
that's,
ROI.
That's enough for it to kind of be in the realm of like a quasi-classic, like... People look back at that movie, but I don't think anybody's like, oh, that's a classic, you know?
I am outspokenly in favor of Mary Lou.
Of two? Yeah. Prom Night 2 is definitely the best.
I have a much more fun time watching it than I do.
Have you seen any of these, Erica?
Probably. These are all older ones, right? And so when I was a kid, I pretty much consumed anything horror and basically nothing's changed. So okay. Now, everyone's classics, and of course The Shining I go back to over and over again quite compulsively.
You may be familiar with some of these. All of these take place, like all of these I'm talking about, released in 1980, just to kind of like give us an idea of what all was releasing at the time to compare it to.
Yeah.
Okay.
So so that one made $14 million, has a 5.3 on IMDb.
Okay.
So it's kind of in the mid there.
All right.
Next up.
Interesting.
Not even related one bit.
Okay.
I take that back. It's about a hotel. So that is a common thread there. But not even a hotel. It's a motel. Motel Hell.
Oh,
Oh my God. See, oh my God.
I took it there. I took it there and I made that connection. That came out October
24th, 1980. That's Bughead
for sure. Oh, hell yeah. $3 million.
I'm surprised it was that much of a budget.
Double the budget of Prom Night.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Did not make anywhere near as
no.
much. $6 million it grossed with a 6 out of 10 on IMDb. That's higher than Prom Night.
I'm going to say this also. I think it's currently on Tubi. You all listening know that we love Tubi. Definitely go watch this one if you haven't.
It's a weird little movie. We watched that for the first time like a couple months ago.
Yeah.
And I'm still kind of like...
I'm still processing it.
Yeah. It's weird. It's a weird movie. It's basically about cannibals. People like stop at their motel and they just like make food out of them.
Yeah.
But then there's like this like love interest.
Some of them are also still alive.
Yeah, they like grow people, like plant people. I don't fucking know. Like, that's what I'm talking about. I'm still not really sure what I watched whenever I watched that movie. All right.
Yeah, it's funny. I have to say, like, I would say I love horror movies, but the slashers don't really scare me. They're just more like the zombie movies. I have to admit, I love The Walking Dead. That's brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the paranormal stuff that compels and really frightens me.
Yes.
You know, every time.
I love some paranormal stuff when it's well done.
That's where I'm at too. Like, well done paranormal stuff. It has to be like a well done movie for me to enjoy it. Slashers though, you can make the worst slasher movie ever, and generally I'll have a good time watching it.
You're a slut for a slasher.
Mm-hmm. I am,
and I'm hardcore. Not shaming you.
No shame. I know who I am. Final movie that I got here. This is the reason why I'm mad that I talked about The Fog last week, because I could have had a Jamie Lee Curtis trilogy here, but it's Terror Train.
Okay.
Which is also kind of seasonal for this month because that's a New Year's movie.
Somehow.
But it's kind of a Halloween movie, but it takes place on New Year's. Anyways, that came out October 3rd with a budget of $3.5 million.
Okay.
Grossed $8
million. Okay.
With an IMDb score of 5.8.
Okay.
So yeah. That one that was a movie that I really wanted to like and I ended up not really caring for it.
Yeah, it's one of those I was like honestly kind of half paying attention to when we watched it on the last drive-in and I've not watched it any other time. So.
I tried cuz like I feel like it checks all the boxes for me and should for you too cuz it's like single location, like all taking place on a train, like very enclosed. But I don't know. There's just something about it. It was kind of boring. It does have David Copperfield doing magic, though.
Some problematic elements to it, too.
And...
Yeah. All right. So that's what was going on in 1980.
Other than The Changeling.
Other than The Changeling. Kubrick definitely had all of those budgets combined. And maybe all of the grosses combined.
Yeah, holy shit, he did. No, he did, actually. Yeah, he beat them all by himself. Okay, now we're on to the taglines. So, pulled all the taglines for this bad boy. There was a surprising amount for this one, actually.
Really?
Yeah, I've got four here for you.
Okay.
The one that's on the poster is a masterpiece of modern horror.
That doesn't actually sound... I mean...
That sounds like it's like self-indulgent. It's just like...
But it also could be like referring to the book.
It could be. And some of
Even though I'd argue that... Well, we'll get to that in a minute.
Well, that's the thing. Like, it's the tagline on the poster. And, I mean, maybe, like, the marketing team was trying to really drive in the fact that this is, like, a really, like, well-known book.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, I'm aware that it's very different from the book. So, I don't know. Maybe they weren't really aware of, like, the difference. They were just trying to, like, push it out and market it.
Yeah.
But to me, that's kind of, like, a lame tagline.
I always hate taglines that sound like a review.
Yeah, and there were a couple more of those in there too. I just kind of didn't include them, but I included this one because it was on the poster.
Okay.
So it made the most sense. Next up, Iconic Terror from the number one best-selling writer. That's another one too.
Yeah.
All right, next one.
That could be on the book cover.
That's true, yeah. Okay, this is an actual tagline. The horror is driving him crazy.
Succinct. Inaccurate.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And the final one, this one's a little bit wordy. He came as the caretaker, But this hotel had its own guardians who'd been there a long time.
Ooh, I like that one better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That one gets it across a little bit better.
Yes.
But it's not punchy. But it does kind of like give you that little bit of mystery, like, ooh.
Yeah.
What's going on
here?
Yeah.
I like it. Fun facts?
Fun facts.
Fun facts.
Okay. So I think that this movie is pretty notorious for being a difficult setting for people to work on there.
What? I have never heard of such a thing ever.
Yeah, so let's just go ahead and get this one out of the way. Yeah, I mean, Jack Nicholson and Shelley Duvall claim that this is the most difficult movie that they've ever worked on. I'm pretty sure Shelley Duvall was driven to he was trying to like actually psychologically torment her to get prepared for the role.
He did.
Yeah. There's a lot of shitty things that happen in the background of the making of this movie. He got the performance, but at what cost?
Yeah.
Because it's kind of like a stain on the legacy of this movie, mm-hmm. I think. Because like, it's hard to enjoy a movie.
It's hard watching Shelley Duvall act as though she's on the verge of a full, like...
Breakdown,
knowing that on set she was on the verge of a full breakdown.
Yeah.
It's hard knowing that it's not 100% performance.
Yeah. Yeah. And I read a lot of things. Everybody had. So basically, what he would do when he was doing this, like, they would do 100 takes basically of almost everything. And it wasn't just her or Jack. Like, it was even Scatman, Dick's scenes. That actor apparently, like, after he did this movie, he did a movie directed by Clint Eastwood where Stanley Kubrick, notorious for doing hundreds of shots to get his scene. Clint Eastwood, notorious for only doing one take. And apparently after he did like the first take of his next movie with him, and that was it, he like cried tears of joy because he's like, oh my God, I don't have to do that bullshit again.
Wow.
And there were actors that he was going to have in this movie that were not interested because they had experience working with him on his previous movies, like Dr. Strangelove. And apparently, like, he's just such like a tyrant on his set that people just don't really enjoy the experience.
Well, okay, so you get the best shot when you have things to choose from, but also from an editing standpoint, that sounds like a nightmare to have to sift through all
that's
of that.
That's what I was thinking,
piece
too.
Piece it all together. Think about her fucking cigarette at the beginning of the movie where she's talking to the doctor. They got to make sure that ash stays consistent between edits.
That's like, okay, that's like going into the deep details right there. For me, I'm trying to like think of somebody editing, and like you have to look at every single shot to see which one is the best one.
I get annoyed when I do like photo shoots of friends and family and I've got more than 5 of a single location, then I have to be like, oh, which one of these looks the best? Yeah. I can't imagine having hundreds.
I can only imagine. It had to have been brutal. apparently rewrites were so common on the set that Jack Nicholson stopped reading his script, and anytime that he was handed a new script that day, he would throw it in the trash because he knew that a new rewrite would be done right at the moment of filming. So to add on to the chaos of everything here, another fun thing that I read about him, his little torment is that they allegedly made him eat cheese sandwiches on set as his only diet, and he hates cheese sandwiches. So that was there to just kind of like get under his skin and agitate him to like add on to the performance.
Oh my God.
I don't know if that's real, but that was like a thing that was in there.
He seems like a curmudgeon fellow anyway.
He does. Yeah. Like Jack Nicholson, I was looking at him in this movie and I saw him smile and I was like, that guy can't smile without looking angry at the same time.
Yeah.
Like he can't look truly happy ever. He always just looks like psychotic.
I mean, okay. I'm going to bring it up again, but Little Shop of Horrors, his debut, he looks slightly unhinged.
Well, yeah, and that's him, like, actual. Okay, he is unhinged in that movie.
I know,
but he's
I'm
also
just saying,
like,
it's always, like.
But that's him, like, he's, like, truly smiling. He's actually happy. And he looks like he is, like, on a fucking psychotic break. Okay, final thing. So apparently, after Kubrick finished his film before he did this movie, it was around 1975, and in order to, how he was picking his next project is he was going to start reading recent releases and kind of get inspiration from that. and his secretary would be in the next room, and anytime that he would start reading a book and get interested in it, he would take the book and throw it against the wall. And apparently one day he picked up The Shining and went into the office, and then she didn't hear anything. It was just silence. And that's when she knew that he found his next project, which was The Shining. Okay. Which Stephen King thinks is bullshit, because he says that The Shining is a really slow start and there's no way people would get that into the book that fast. Like, especially somebody like Kubrick, probably, because he's met Kubrick.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know what to believe.
I know that King, yeah, I mean, I know that King didn't like Kubrick's version at all. And again, I have my pet theories as to why, but I think that Kubrick could recognize another genius, you know?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I will have some things to say about that here at some point in the episode. We can shed some light on the conflict between the two of them there. To say, like, and conflict is in quotations. Like, there's not really any conflict, but they definitely are at odds with this movie.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But that's it. That's all my fun facts. I mean, everybody knows all the shit about this movie, basically, so... You know, that is what it is.
So, Erica, one of the things we do when we talk about the movie is we kind of like to look at it from all aspects. The good parts of it, the things that we enjoyed, the bad parts, maybe things that, you know, fail to live up to the hype for us. The ugly parts, potentially things that didn't age so well or that just hit us the wrong way. Mm-hmm. And then the absurd, which is just moments where you kind of have to let loose and laugh.
Yeah.
So do you have any opinions on those aspects of this movie?
You know, I think for me, you know, in my novel, White Horse, the main character is indigenous and she's very, you know, sarcastic and Gen X-y and sort of, you know, she's not going to get involved in the politics of really anything. She doesn't want to bother, but she can't help it when she does her tour of the Overlook, which my niece and I did, actually. If you guys go to the Shining Hotel, the Stanley, they have a Shining tour. And it was one of the more amusing things of my life. But they talk about, basically, in the tour that I make up in the novel, they talk about, someone's asking about how in the movie, they're like, oh, this was on an Indian burial ground. Right. Mm-hmm. And how basically that's not in the book at all.
Yeah.
At all. And yet, ironically, King has a lot of what you might call problematic Native American material throughout. Right. And I think he's a reasonable guy. I think that he, you know, given another chance, he might be like, oh, you know, I'd do that differently now. But that's what's interesting. Why did Kubrick choose to put that in there? And so for me, whenever I watch the movie again, I think about how Native people are, you know, in Denver, where I'm from, loads and loads of Native people, which is in many ways part of what my book is about. And yet here we are erased again, except by sort of like, oh, you know, there were these warring, terrible Indians that, you know, we had to push away. And so every time I watch it, I think about what a masterpiece it is in many, many ways. And like I said, I compulsively watch it. But I think about that again and again, and you know, the kind of world that I grew up in as a Native person watching movies like that.
So what would you rate this out of 10?
It's still a 10 to me if 10 is the best, because, you know, obviously I watched The Shining compulsively, so.
Okay, cool. Do you want to go?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so originally, much like I've done with our other Stephen King adaptations, I was going to read the book. I was going to reread it before we watched it. Mm-hmm. And then it's been a very hectic month, if you guys have been listening at all. And then I also decided, because this is one of those that I become unduly influenced by the differences between the book and the movie when I watch it. So all in all, I decided to hold off on rereading it until after watching it. Just so that way I could get a little bit more of distance between the book and the movie for me, because it is a really well done movie. It's lengthy, but it doesn't necessarily feel its length.
Yeah.
It's got a lot of really nice shots. The tension is there. The performances are there. The little kid, I was impressed with.
Yeah, dude, he's a good actor, actually.
Yeah,
I was like, very impressed.
There were some moments that he was making facial expressions, and they looked similar to Jack Nicholson's facial expressions.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like there were a couple of moments near the end, especially that I noticed, and I was like, oh, that's pretty impressive. But I also feel it makes me think of this activity we had to do in a former job I had, where it was like a team building type thing where you're all given the same art materials and the same prompt, but the end result is different. And it kind of feels like Stanley Kubrick was like, okay, hotel, ghosts, family drama. And he did it in a completely different way than what the novel is.
He took the bones of it and he kind of made his own story, basically. He broke it down to like its core, to its probably not even its core, because like I'm under the impression that this movie has like a very different meaning to like the way Stephen King wrote it compared to how this one is. Like, it's just,
there's a lot more focus on Jack's struggle with sobriety, his generational trauma with his own father's substance use issues and his abusive tendencies towards him, and him struggling, recognizing that in himself, not wanting to perpetuate that cycle, struggling with it, compounded with being isolated in the hotel, Danny being so young, wanting desperately to keep his family together and kind of lying about his own fears and thoughts to his parents, trying to make it okay. There's just so much more there. And it really, I think the movie tells a good story. It's just very different from the book.
To me,
I think the book is a lot more heartfelt.
Okay. Surprise, surprise, I have not read this book. Everybody would probably assume that at this point, but like, if you were to, I would say that this is probably more of like a visual telling. Like, the movie is very much visual heavy, and I imagine the book, you know, it's a book, it doesn't have the visuals to tell that story, so it has to like go more into detail about things.
Yeah, but you get the visual in your mind.
Yeah, you get to build it in your mind, I guess. But I don't know. Like, I feel like with the movie, like a lot is like just shown rather than.
And that's the thing with having to adapt a book to film. And that's one of those things that I've really tried to like struggle in terms of growing with, is understanding that you can't tell the same story from book to film necessarily just because of the differences in medium.
Right.
But I do feel like it misses a lot of the finer points of it.
Okay.
That could have been, I mean, there are a lot of long establishing shots of the Overlook that could take a little bit more to establish some of the relationship dynamics going on. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
How many times did we have to see the elevator with buckets of blood?
Really cool shot. Like, they spent so much money and time on that
shot. We could have probably cut out 10 minutes of Danny riding his bike down the hall. Like,
I just, like, imagine Stanley Kubrick being like, no, it's just so cool.
Like, I like to imagine Stanley Kubrick on his own little trike behind Danny. Like,
he's, like, got the camera attached to, the front of it. Oh, man. That's a great visual.
And someone does a YouTube actually comparing Stephen King's movie. So Stephen King did his own, like, I think it was made for TV movie.
Yeah.
He did the miniseries, I think it was.
Yeah, I've not watched it, but I've heard that it's a much more faithful adaptation.
Mm-hmm. I think that, in my opinion, my pet theory is that King was an alcoholic and he was also addicted to a lot of things at the time. And I think what Kubrick does is he kind of like, for example, in the book, right, the there's no hedge maze. It's a series of hedge animals that attack.
Yes.
You know, Kubrick found that really silly. And I think what Kubrick did was boil it down to its most basic elements to make it scarier. So, for example, Jack Nicholson's character, Jack, is much more of an unequivocal bad guy. And she's much more of an unequivocal victim. And I think that's why it's scarier. And there's a lot more like suspense, right? Because it's a visual medium. But I think the other part of it is King had to sit there and watch a very, very, you know, cartoonish version of himself, you know, the worst version of himself up on the screen. I think that's part of why he doesn't like it.
Yeah, I've always heard the theory that the book is very personal to him.
It's one of, he said it's one of his most personal novels.
Again, I am not very well known. I don't know much about this subject, but just from what I've heard, like, he just, a lot of people just assume he doesn't like seeing this portrayal of what is essentially him, right? Because, like, Jack is basically him, right?
Yeah.
Wasn't Stephen King also a teacher? Or is that just a character? Oh, he was? Okay, cool. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the thing, too, though, is that I get the whole point of boiling it down to its most basic plot elements, but I do feel like that misses a lot of what the book gives me in terms of a story, is that nuance and everything there.
The person who broke it down basically said that the book, because, you know, what you've got in the book works in the book.
Yeah,
and it's just not going to translate to film.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's the thing, too, is I always think of the hedge animals. And it's so scary when you read it in the book. But, yeah, it would look goofy on
the screen. In the 80s, for sure. Unless you get, like, some good practical effects artists out there.
It would look very goofy. Whereas the hedge maze is something that you can tell. Like, you can make it spooky. You
a hedge maze is scary because, like, you get lost in a maze. Like, that shit is scary. Especially in the middle of, like, a terrible snowstorm.
Yeah.
Like, that's scary.
Poor little Danny in his Mickey Mouse sweater. That's not warm enough for him out there.
No. Boy did okay, though.
You know, Alice Walker, it always reminds me, Alice Walker's The Color Purple. If you read it, and then you've seen Spielberg's The Color Purple. And Spielberg sort of, again, he pares it down to its most, its strongest elements, and he just plays them out. I mean, and I can see why he made the decisions he made. But, you know, and it's kind of similar. I compulsively watched The Shining, and I was like, you know, I need to reread the book if I'm going to write a novel that has a lot of the, you know, the book in there. And I had forgotten how absolutely bizarre the ending is, where at the end of the book, right, there's sort of these, like, the spirit of the house, the mansion or the hotel blows up. They blow up the hotel. And there's a sort of stingray spirit that is killed.
And this guy and fucking, he's got stingrays and turtles. Like, what is with him?
Yeah.
So very, very different. And I was like, boy, that I love this book, but that was anticlimactic. That's odd.
Well, okay. Here's the thing, though. I'm a diehard Stephen King fan. He's not known for sticking the landing. He's never been good at an ending. I love his short stories and novellas.
I think it's funny, though. Yeah. Like, it's so obvious, like, and then it explodes and a stingray is there, too. The end.
I mean, it's a little bit more eloquent than that.
No, that's how it went. That's how it went. Don't tell me otherwise.
One thing I've learned as an author, though, is that no one ever likes your ending. Mm. Just really, it's okay. No one will ever like it. There's nothing you can do.
Yeah.
Everybody's a critic. Well, what do you everybody rate thinks it? They can do it better until they try and do it themselves.
So what do you rate this?
I think I'm going to rate it a 7.75.
Okay.
I think it's a very good movie. I just have a lot of sentimental attachment to the book. And as much as I try and separate that,
it's hard
for me to.
I get that. I have no connection. So I've only seen this movie. This is probably like my third time watching it. I do think that this is a really enjoyable movie. It is long, but and it's slow, but I think the thing that really kind of keeps your attention is the visuals. Stanley Kubrick has like a great eye for cinema. Like, just all of his movies, beautiful. His shots in this are just incredible. Like, just the shot of them taking the tour through the hotel at the beginning with like Wendy and them.
It makes you want to be at the hotel.
There's that shot of them where they're all, like, the camera is moving perfectly in sync with them while they are centered in the frame, and then it's, like, panning across the hotel. And I don't know, like, I saw that. I was like, this should be boring, but I am kind of amazed by what I'm watching right now. So, yeah, it has that going for it. The bad for this, I do think that the length could be, like, you kind of, what you said, it does have a lot of those shots that probably aren't necessary. It might be there to build, like, dread and suspense because you don't know what's around the corner. Like, you are introduced to the, like, the spookiness of this place pretty much right away. Like, most movies would kind of have him slowly, like, go crazy, but, and it would, like, slowly introduce the, like, the ghost characters in this movie, but, like, this one right here, like, you kind of get that stuff introduced right away. Like, you get, like, the shiny exploited Danny, like, within the first 20 minutes. It's told in a different way than I feel like a lot of movies probably would have done. Ugly, obviously, the background stuff kind of makes it hard to watch knowing that. And yeah. The absurd, I'm just gonna say the sweaters that Danny has.
I love Danny's little Mickey Mouse sweater. I like it's that so they, adorable.
They're like, okay, he's wearing like a Mickey Mouse sweater, but like he's kind of, they're like dressing him like a grown man in like a little tiny boy's
body.
Well,
I think I love that aesthetic though.
Like,
so
he had that one, he had a shirt on underneath his sweater, and his collars were like as big as his head. Like, he's, it was so insane.
It's a little dapper gentleman.
Yeah, he was. Okay. I'm gonna give it an eight.
Okay.
Because it's a really good movie. It's probably one that I have a hard time watching consistently because it is like a beast to tackle.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I really do enjoy this movie.
Okay.
So what's our average?
We have a starting average of 8.58.
Okay, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's almost like right in line with IMDb.
Okay. So we're going to go through this fairly quickly.
Yeah.
To keep in mind Erica's
time
schedule.
Yes.
But as we said, there's not a lot of plot to the movie. It's a lot of
visuals.
Beautiful shots.
Yeah. Which we get introduced to one right away with the hotel.
Yep.
And a lot of driving. Mm-hmm. Crazy camera action, man. Like, you see these shots of the camera, like, getting really close to the car as it's driving through the mountains. They didn't have drones back then. This is like a fucking helicopter just, like, getting close to the car. Like, it could just, like, psh, like, just nail them right off the road. It's kind of scary.
So this is the interview where Jack is going to meet with the manager,
Mr. Ullman.
And Bill Watson, and learn about the hotel, and basically he's learning about the history of the hotel, and what his role is going to be as the winter caretaker. They have to close down in the winter due to the roads not being passable when the snort. Snowstorms get bad.
Yeah, they shut down from
October to May.
October to May.
So he's got to check on the boilers and like kind of rotate what he's heating throughout the hotel and perform routine maintenance.
Then he gives them the warning of the history of the place. He talks about Charles Grady, who suffered a mental breakdown while he was the previous caretaker and killed his family with an axe.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't seem to bother him though.
Yeah.
He's all on board.
Meanwhile, Danny and Wendy are at their apartment. Danny is a little bit tense. Wendy is very tense. Danny says a little boy named Tony is living in his mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And the doctor that makes a house call is not at all concerned by this.
No, not at all. Like, I like how she's like, you're okay, but stay in bed all day long. Like, you cannot get out of bed. And he's like, do I have to? And she's like, yeah, you gotta stay there.
Like, she says, I'd really like it. And I just want Danny to be like, okay, well, I don't care what you'd like. I don't know you.
Yeah, well, he's a little kid. And like the smallest amount of authority is like, okay, fine. I'll stay here all day.
That's true. Kids are either like they fully respect authority or they completely disregard
exactly.
it. There's no in between with children that
and
age.
And he's got Jack as his dad. So he's probably scared of disobeying.
So it's closing day. The family is driving to the hotel and they see everybody clearing out. They get taken on a tour of the hotel. Wendy, because she's the woman, gets the tour of the kitchen.
Yeah,
that's,
I know.
Annoying.
Like, yeah, there's a lot of that in this. It's just unfortunate. Basically, when this is happening, though, Danny is introduced
to Dick Halloran.
To Dick, yeah. He shows up. He is the chef of the place.
Yeah.
And he starts communicating with Danny with his mind. And I love these shots of him communicating with him because it's like that slow. It's like you kind of get like the view from Danny because it's kind of like angled up at him. And it's like a slow zoom at him. And he just kind of like turns and stares at him. Like,
yeah.
It's really cool. I like it. But yeah, he explains to him basically that he has the Shining, and he can communicate to people. He can see things that have happened and things that will happen.
Yeah, he said if you've got a if you've got the Shine, then sometimes a building with a history like the Overlook will also share pictures with you, but you just have to remember they're like pictures in a book and they can't hurt you.
Mm-hmm. And then Danny apparently has been getting information about room 237.
Yeah.
And he asked him about
it. Tommy's been telling him about his room 237. Yeah.
And then Dick is like, stay far, far away from there.
He's like, absolutely nothing happened in there, but stay out.
Okay. Yeah, right. Cool. Like, okay. He can see things that have happened here. Like, he knows he's going to be exposed to
also
that.
Don't lie to the, like, you tell a child one lie and he's going to wonder what else you're lying to him about.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, like do I have the Shine? Like, are you just like bullshitting me?
Are you a really good ventriloquist?
Yeah, he's like throwing his voice. Oh my god, can you imagine? Like, that's how he was just messing with him this entire time.
So a month passes. They're, you know, all in the hotel trying to make everything seem good. Wendy is cooking Jack breakfast in bed. Jack is putting off writing.
He's like, he keeps mentioning that he needs to get to writing, but then he just doesn't write.
I mean, writer's block is very real.
Oh, I'm sure it is. But he's kind of like being an asshole to everybody here about it. Well, like, she's like, hey, you should take me for a walk. You know, it's really nice out here. This is like a really lovely place. And he's like, yeah, I should write. And then he just like goes and cuts to like him in the room. And he's just throwing a ball against the wall. Like, he's just not even... He doesn't seem to be trying.
I don't know. It's that he's not trying to write. I think it's that he's not trying to be an active member of his family.
That's true. Yeah.
So we start to get like little moments of like Jack staring out at Wendy and Danny, and like you're like
staring at.
That's
them.
Not the look of a person who loves his family.
That's just how Jack Nicholson looks. Like, just look normal, Jack, please.
Wendy finds that the phone lines are down, so she uses the radio, and the forest rangers are basically like, yeah, just keep your radio on until the end of winter,
because yeah, phone lines,
you're not going to be able to use the phone.
They said that they're going to be down the entire season.
Yeah.
Like, they just don't even try.
Danny sees the twins, mm-hmm. who want to play with him forever and ever and ever.
Yeah, he had also rode by room 237 at mm-hmm. one point, tried to go in, the door was locked. He's getting all these visions throughout this whole time, too.
Yeah. We start to see, like, tensions are rising. Wendy and Danny are out of their living quarters watching some cartoons. And Danny's like, I want to go get my toy from the apartment. And Wendy's like, dear God, please don't. Your dad's asleep. We do not need to wake him up right now. And then Danny swears he'll be quiet. But when he walks into the apartment, Jack's awake. And this is, like, a super tense moment because, like, you're like, oh, God. Like, the dread of this moment is very real. And then when Jack has Danny come sit on the bed and he's like, you know, I love you, buddy. You know, I'd never hurt you. It's, and like, this moment is
so
terrifying.
Beforehand, they had talked. Wendy had talked with, I can't remember who it was, but no, it was the psychiatrist or the doctor that saw Danny earlier. And she described a moment in their past where Jack had grabbed Danny because he was angry with him by the arm and jerked him and then dislocated his shoulder.
Yeah. In the book, he actually breaks his arm when he does that.
You described that scene to me last night.
I think I got it mixed up with something else, too. Okay. But yeah. But there is also like other incidences where he dropped Danny as a baby.
Oh, in the book.
Mm-hmm. And he got fired from his teaching job for assaulting a student.
Okay. So this guy's just a jerk.
Yeah, it was okay. A real piece of work.
Yeah, he's supposedly 5 months sober now.
Yes, so. and that's the thing with the book is that he's trying really hard to not be like that anymore.
Like it
doesn't excuse his past actions, but he recognizes what happened and that it wasn't okay, and that he needs to be better.
So in the book, he's actively trying to be a good person, while in the movie, he's just kind of like accepted that he's a shitty person. I mean, there's like inklings of attempts. Like this scene right here, it seems like he's trying to connect with Danny, but like you can tell Danny is super uncomfortable being around him.
Yeah, in the book, like Danny and Jack are super close. Wendy wants to leave Jack but doesn't want to have to go live with her mother. It's like there are so many layers to all of the family drama.
Okay.
In the book that the movie realistically couldn't get it all in there.
Right. Okay.
All right, sorry about that, folks. We had to, Travis, take off your headphones.
Oh shit.
It's just us. Erica had to go, unfortunately. We got so caught up talking at the beginning that we lost a little bit of our time management, but I think it was still a very good discussion. We want to go ahead and finish talking about the movie and do our closing thoughts, though.
Yeah, and
we'll make sure that we put where you can find her at the end and in our show notes, too. So. Yeah,
and we don't have to rush quite as much anymore. Yeah. Since we're not under, we're on our own time now, baby. You guys are in now. All right.
No, we still have two more recordings we have to get done before the end of the weekend.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. Well, still. Okay. Okay. So where were we?
Jack just said that he will definitely never, ever, 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 ever hurt Danny. And Danny can 100% trust that word.
Yeah, and Danny's like, okay, cool. And he even is asking him, is like, are you gonna hurt us? And then he's like, did your mom tell me tell you that? And then so you can tell like there's like friction there between the family because of the history there.
Yeah. So Danny is playing with his cars. A ball rolls up to him from seemingly nowhere. So when he goes to try and look where it came from, oh, look, room 237 is open. Uh-huh. And he goes in. Meanwhile, Wendy is downstairs in the cellar doing Jack's job.
Jack fucking sucks, man. Like, he's the worst guy. I feel so bad for Wendy. This movie is basically, I feel so bad for Wendy. Yeah. The movie. It's just so bad.
This movie is, I understand why Wendy smokes.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
So she hears Jack screaming and she runs upstairs and I'm immediately tense because I'm like, he told you not to ever come into that room no matter what. And he is already like on a very thin line of losing his shit.
Yeah, we didn't talk about that before, but that scene made me really sad for her because she's trying so hard. She's trying to talk to him about the writing process. And I imagine it's frustrating talking about that you're not able to like come up with anything, because like what he's been saying is he's had a lot of ideas, he's not had any good ideas, he hasn't really started anything, and she's trying to be encouraging, but she basically told him to fuck off, if you hear me in here don't come in here.
He told her that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so she's coming in there as he's screaming.
Yeah, and I'm just like, oh God, oh my God. Like every like red flag alarm bell is going off in my head. I'm like, Wendy, you're not safe in this moment. No. But he's actually like, he is so caught off guard by his nightmare that like he's not even mad at seeing her. And then Danny comes down the stairs and he is obviously disheveled and in shock. And he's got a bruise around his neck. And even though this is such a long shot. Mm-hmm. Because the camera is kind of where Jack is at, and Wendy and Danny are all the way across this like giant room.
Yeah.
And you can see, even from that long shot, the look Wendy is giving him.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Shelley Duvall has such big eyes. And that's not like a slight to her. I'm just saying, like, you can see her emotions from across that room.
Yeah. Well, and she, you know, it's not like he's never hurt Danny before, and that doesn't necessarily mean that, like, he should never be given a second chance. Well, but also, it's the three of them in the hotel. So what the fuck was Wendy supposed to think?
Okay, and he just told her that he had a nightmare that he killed all of them.
Yeah.
With an axe.
Yeah.
And, Danny walks into the room, and his shirt's torn, and he's got bruises on his neck, and
he won't come anywhere near Jack.
Yeah, they're the only three people there. He was afraid to go up and get his toys from the apartment earlier. All signs point to Jack hurting him.
Yeah. So Wendy runs off to the quarters with him and locks Jack out, and Jack's pissed, and then he goes and shit-talks Wendy to a ghost.
Yes, basically. So he goes to the bar.
He calls her a fucking sperm bank, which is the grossest, most demeaning thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, it's not even like original. Like, it's just bad. But then, like, he's got this ghost butler there, and he's basically just like, you know, patting him on the back for all these like little comments and stuff, and serving him imaginary drinks. And yeah,
I appreciate the play on words where he's drinking Jack Daniels.
I saw that.
I enjoy that, even though my little Kentucky heart is sad it's not Maker's or something.
Yeah, Maker's is,
but Jack superior. Daniels is good too.
Jack Daniels is good, yeah.
But in the book, he's more of a gin drinker. But I just think that's a fun little, like,
just a
fun little play. Yeah, like,
give Jack, who's playing Jack, some Jack.
Exactly.
There you go.
Are you a little bit sad that they didn't find an actress named Wendy
to play? No, I am, because I was thinking that. Like, the names of the cast of this movie are just fantastic. You got Jack playing Jack. You got Danny playing Danny. You got Scatman playing Dick. And then you got Shelley playing Wendy. It is a little bit disappointing. But I do like the casting in this movie.
Yeah.
So anyways, he's there having his imaginary drinks while Wendy is running through the hallway shouting for him, because Danny revealed that it wasn't Jack that did this. It was a woman in room 237 who was taking a bath and strangled him.
Here's the thing. If we take out all the supernatural elements of this, this is still fucking terrifying. Yeah. Because
a person in the hotel, yeah, right?
A home invasion in a hotel with hundreds of rooms?
Yeah.
How easy? Because, okay, so here's what happens is Jack goes to room 237 and bearing in mind he's about to completely fucking gaslight his family. Mm. You know, even if he had actually seen nothing, like, okay, cool. Maybe go check some of the other rooms. Don't just assume that there's nobody else there because she left that room by the time you got up there.
There are worst so case many. Scenario,
it's been at least an hour since she strangled Danny. Her bath has gone cold.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? She's not going to still be in the bathtub.
She would have finished and gone on about herself. Yeah.
So Jack goes in there, sees a naked lady in the tub. This actress looks fucking terrified. By the way.
Yeah, she does.
I felt very uncomfortable just because we've heard so many things that happened on set. I'm like, was Stanley Kubrick yelling at this naked lady?
Yeah, like, she
How
did
long look... did she have to stand there naked in front of an entire crew?
Like, in probably cold water.
Yeah.
Because, like, if they are doing hundreds of takes, like, that's like, that water has gone cold.
Like, I she looks scared.
Uncomfortable.
And sad.
Yeah. Jack is like, I'm going to get my freak on. And he goes over there and gives her a hug and some smooches, and then she turns into a old lady who has a partially decomposed body, which is very scary.
That kind of hiney you can really sink your fingers into.
No, that's so nasty. And we proceed with the nastiness because she's like chasing Jack out of the room.
She's got a terrified laugh too.
She does. Yeah, this is really scary. This woman doesn't look sad. She looks like she's having the time of her
life. Oh yeah.
Jack just gets the fuck out of there, goes back upstairs, is like, yeah, there's nobody in there. I don't know what he saw. I don't know who strangled him. I don't know.
Yeah.
He's like, well, that's it. Couldn't be in any other room.
Yeah. And then he says, clearly the answer is Danny did it to himself. How is that clear? That clear, Jack? Clearly we go back to the original assumption that it was you.
Yeah, that would be the logical conclusion, because like, this guy's got a history of this and he's been acting a little bit weird here, and Danny is kind of afraid of him. I don't know. It seems logical to assume so.
Meanwhile, down in Florida, Dick Halloran is watching the weather. And they're talking about the snowstorms going through Colorado. And so he tries to call the hotel. Call can't go through. So he makes a call to the Rangers. They say they'll radio him and to check back in. The book, Danny uses a Shining. He calls out to Dick. Says, hey, come help.
That's what I thought he was doing here too, right? Like, does he not send him like a little message also?
I don't know. I missed it if he did.
Maybe not here. No, he does here. Yeah, because he's sending him the images of what's going on in the hotel as Jack is approaching the woman. That's when you get the shot of Danny. Like, he's got that weird face, which, again, the kid does a great job of, like,
doing very... Here's the thing, though, is that Stanley Kubrick does a lot of these, like, quick shots between different images, so it's hard to understand what he's...
Yeah, this right here, I feel like it was kind of... Because it's showing Danny, like... doing his frothing weird face, and then you can see Dick's eyes get wide with terror, and then all of this is happening while you're also seeing Jack approach this woman. Like, he's sending this out to him. So yeah, Dick, he calls the Rangers, can't get through on the phone, and they're like, well, we'll try and radio them, call us back in 20 minutes.
Yeah.
As that's happening, Jack is taking it upon himself to go to the radio because he hears the Rangers calling, and he dismantles the radio so nobody can get through.
Yeah. We get Rad Rom. More of the blood elevator. Jack goes to the ballroom again. This time it's full. He gets a drink. He pulls out some money, and he's like, oh, no, the big man says you don't have to pay. And he's suspicious of that. He's not suspicious of the ghost bartender.
No.
Or the ghost bourbon, because the bar was meant to be cleared out.
I can't tell if, like, he was just kind of enjoying himself at the bar there, but there's like a moment where it looks like he's grabbing an imaginary bottle and like drinking, like he like tilts it up. I don't know, he could have just been him like just kind of enjoying the vibe of the place.
So he finds out so he gets up, he's walking through the ballroom, gets a drink spilled on him by this guy who he keeps calling Jeevesy until he, you know, takes a second to ask his name because the guy is helping him clean his jacket off in the bathroom. It's Delbert Grady. Jack questions. He's like, didn't you used to be the caretaker? And he goes, no. He goes, no, you were definitely the caretaker, and you killed your wife and kids and then shot yourself. You're definitely that Grady.
See, and this is the thing, because I think he actually is wrong, because in the beginning, the guy's name is Charles Grady. So I think that he either it's like a Delbert is like another part of his name, or like he actually is wrong about this.
No, I think that's just a difference of like nicknaming or whatever.
Maybe. Okay.
You know, and he talks about how his girls, when they were there, they didn't like it. One of them tried to burn it down. She had to be corrected.
Mm-hmm. And then he suggests that he do some correcting himself.
And there's some very unpleasant language usage as well surrounding DeKalorin.
Yeah, he's basically telling him Danny is kind of sending help. He's got a incredible power, and he's using it against you.
Yeah.
He's phoning Dick to come help.
Yeah. So Wendy, meanwhile, is planning to use the radio to call the Rangers, tell them that they're going to take the snowcat down the mountain, be looking for them. And if Jack doesn't want to come, Jack doesn't want to come. I say don't even tell Jack about the plan.
No, don't.
Don't invite him.
No, not at all. Like, he can't
come to this party.
He's made it clear that he wants to stay here no matter what. He does not give a fuck about his family at all. So just like, fuck off, man. Just leave him there.
Then we get Rad Rom. We get that again. And Tony says that Danny is asleep and that Danny is gone. And Wendy is like, cool. Meanwhile, downstairs, Jack is taking apart the radio.
The radio.
Every time I wrote radio on my notes last night, like, my brain just said radio.
Radio.
I don't know why. 8 a.m. the next day, Dick is on an airplane to Denver. Jack is doing his ratting. Dick calls his friend Larry to ask for the use of a snowcat, because he's like, oh, yeah, the caretakers are kind of unreliable. Ullman asked me to come check this out.
That's a good lie.
That's a smooth lie, yeah. He's planning to drive in from Denver, which is... I mean, the weather is already getting real bad, so...
It's quite frightful.
Yes. Danny and Wendy are watching cartoons. Wendy is going to go find Jack.
Oh, and at this point, Danny is basically, like...
Catatonic.
He's receded it into himself, and it's just Tony talking.
Yeah. Okay, Mrs. Torrance. Mm-hmm. So Wendy goes down to the writing room, finds just pages and pages of a manuscript that I read... Stanley Kubrick had some intern on set writing all of these pages individually.
That's all I can think about whenever I watch the scene. Like, how miserable was the person that had to type all of that out? Because, like,
okay.
Not only is it just, like, consistently, like, in paragraphs or just throughout the page, like, they have it laid out like stylized, a script.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All work and no play makes Jack a dull boy.
Mm-hmm.
Would you rather on the set have... the role of having to type up this manuscript, or would you rather be one of the actors who has to do 100 takes?
You know what? They're both torture. But you know what? I would rather be the actor, because at least I would have something to show for it. Right now, we're just like, yeah, the intern. Maybe.
Some guy.
Yeah, some guy did it. He doesn't even get credit. You know, on screen, you can at least be like, that's me. I did that 100 times. That's one of those 100 times right there.
That is 1% of my work.
Yeah.
Okay. So Jack walks in, and again, I'm like, Wendy, get the fuck out of this writing room.
This whole scene is creepy, though, because she is, you can see the horror on her face when she's reading this, and then he's sneaking up behind her, and then he's like, you like what you see?
And she's like, I'm worried about you. He says a bunch of creepy shit about Danny, and
I gotta say, by the way, she's brought a bat with her for self-defense, as she should. However, she is holding this thing the worst possible way. She is not going to get any good swing out of this. I played baseball.
He was an all-star, god damn it.
I was. Grab it by the handle and just fucking swing from, like, just swing it out like that. That way you have more. But she's got it, like, she's holding it all the way up at the top and just kind of, like, doing real, like, gentle swings at him. It's kind of pathetic, but you know what? It works because he's chasing her up the stairs and she swings at his head, knocks him down the stairs, and he gets knocked out.
Yeah. Well, okay. And this wasn't even just her, like, being afraid and him coming to her. He made an actual threat. He said, I'm not gonna hurt you. I'm just gonna bash your brains in.
That shit hurts.
And then she turns the tables.
She's like, you lied to me.
She turned tables and bashes his brains.
Yeah.
Just a little bit.
Yeah, she's like, at least consider it. She's like, I'm just going to tap him. I'm not going to bash him.
Yeah. So she takes him into one of the walk-in pantries, locks him in. And I'm like, at this moment, I'm like, just fucking go, dude. Like, why are you waiting?
Yeah.
Because when he wakes up, it's not like she's like, cool, you're still alive. Let me go get help. Like,
okay. Well,
he's either going to be alive or not. Go get your child and try and get out of here.
So she did make an attempt, but he's like, good luck getting out. I've already taken care of the snowcat. So she runs out to the garage and sees that he sabotaged the snowcat also. They don't have a way to drive out of there.
Yeah.
So basically at this point, I don't know what else she could do. She's just kind of stuck there with Danny.
Yeah. So she goes back to the apartment, locks the door, and
Has a knife.
Goes and takes a nappy nap.
Yeah, how can you sleep in a moment like this?
Pure terror. She's like exhausted.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
4 p.m. Jack wakes up. There are cereal boxes and Oreo wrappers all around him, and I relate a little bit harder to him in a moment than I want to admit.
That was our Thanksgiving.
That sounds sad. We made dirt cake with Oreos. We didn't eat cereal for Thanksgiving.
No. We had a good Thanksgiving. Yes.
We had like a full, like, what? We had like 5 dishes?
Yeah, we did.
Between the two of us? Yeah.
Yeah, we did better than Jack. So, Grady is knocking on the door. He's basically giving him shit like, hey, bro, you kind of sucks. You really suck at this bash and brains and thing.
Yeah, like, how can you not just easily kill this woman who's 50 pounds lighter than you and a child?
Yeah.
You just kick that fucker across the room. A shiny little kid. Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, don't rub it in. You guys like my Jack Nicholson, by the way?
It sounds a lot like your Christian Slater.
Well, my Christian Slater is Christian Slater doing Jack Nicholson. Greetings and salutations.
So we see shots of a snowcat coming up the sidewinder.
Mm-hmm. Good old Dick on his way.
Danny / Tony red rums and steals Wendy's knife and then takes her lipstick and graffitis all over the room. Red rum. Red Rum! And I love saying it. Wendy wakes up and sees Red Rum in the mirror. And here's the thing. It's such a good reveal, but also when it happens, you kind of feel like a dum-dum. Because see it and you're like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Red Rum backwards is murder.
Yeah, yeah. It
Nilbog backwards is goblin.
With this right here, like,
Taco
whenever...
Taco Cat backwards is Taco Cat.
When I would see it in the movie, I would be like, that's obviously murder, but that's because I've seen it so many times. But yeah, like, having seen it before, like, or like for a first time reveal, that does seem like a mindfuck.
Okay, but imagine reading the book and seeing Red Rum written out 100 times and never once being like, murder. Yeah. I felt so stupid.
Stephen King's like, I got you.
You are stupid.
You got got. So yeah, she starts freaking out because Danny's got the knife. He's riding murder backwards.
And then Jack's at the door.
Yeah.
With the hatchet. Busting it down. And so Wendy takes Danny into the bathroom and is like sliding up that tiny little bathroom window.
Yeah.
This makes me grateful that we have like a full size window in our bathroom.
I know, right? We get to escape if we needed to. Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, hers seems like it's full size. It's just like it won't open all the way. It's open wide enough for Danny to get out. So she slides him down the hill. And I say this is the most fun this kid had in the entire movie, working with Stanley Kubrick. He's like, and you're going to slide down a hill. He's like, okay.
You know what it makes me think of?
What?
The level in Mario 64 where you race the penguin down the ice slide.
Yeah, definitely. Wendy can't fit, though.
No.
So she's trapped in the bathroom.
I think even if she could have gotten the window up all the way, it's like a very tight frame.
Yeah.
And Shelley Duvall is a tiny woman,
yeah, she's
but
really
I still
thin.
Feel like she would have struggled to like get
she would
that.
Have. You could see she definitely was not fit for that. Like Danny barely made it through, and he's a tiny child.
Yeah, even his bulky little Mickey Mouse sweater didn't slow him down. Yeah.
So here we go. We get the infamous scene of Jack axing through the door, and he's like, "Here's Johnny."
And then she slices his hand with a knife.
That's enough to get him. And then also, while this is happening, they hear the snowcat pulling out or pulling up outside. So Jack leaves her to go investigate.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Danny goes to hide in a cabinet and makes the most fucking noise you can make while
he's
hiding.
He's a kid. I get it. But
kids play hide and seek.
Yeah, badly. Like, kids can't hide for shit. Are you kidding me? That's how you can find them, because they like knock everything over in the way of getting to their spot,
and then they go
yeah, and they're just laughing. Yeah. And Danny, he's like screaming the entire time, like, because Dick comes into the place and then he gets killed, and then like he has that connection with Danny, so Danny starts screaming.
Danny sees the entire murder.
Yeah. And
so
again,
he
like,
starts screaming.
This kid's face when he screams is really good too.
Yeah.
It's like, it's kind of like a haunting shot. You
yeah.
see that.
So
he gets out, and I don't know. Oh, I guess obviously he revealed himself by screaming. So he's like, I got to get out of here.
Yeah. So he goes running. Jack chases after him. Meanwhile, Wendy is also running, and she's seeing ghosts everywhere.
Yeah, she's seeing a guy get a blowjob by a guy wearing a bunny outfit, a bear outfit. A dog?
I thought it was a dog outfit.
I don't know. It's weird. It's always like one of the more like, I kind of like these types of shots because it's like, what the fuck is happening? It just kind of makes you feel like you're losing it.
So while Danny's in the maze, he realizes that his the snow is like making very obvious footsteps. And this kid is smart.
This is super smart for a kid. This is too smart for a kid.
I wouldn't, again, my dumbass that couldn't figure out red rum backwards is murder would not have like been like, oh, I should go backwards in my own footsteps.
This kid's all about backwards, man. He's like, hey, ride murder backwards, walk backwards. This is my thing. Yeah.
So he manages to do that. Throws his dad off just long enough to be able to get out of the maze. As Wendy comes running out. They get onto Dick's snowcat while Jack has a heart attack.
Is that what he does? He has a heart attack?
That's what it looks like is happening.
I thought he just kind of like collapsed from being like way too cold. And
he's doing like this thing where he's like grabbing his shoulder and chest. So
okay.
I was like visually describing it, or I was visually like acting it out, and then I realized that we're in an audio medium, so I
yeah.
explained what I was
She's
doing.
Grabbing her heart. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So he has a heart attack, maybe, and then freezes to death.
Yeah.
And you get that shot of his face.
Yeah.
And we've already established this is very different from the ending of the book because the hotel doesn't explode; it just freezes.
Yeah. So, and then we cut to this picture from 1921, and we see Jack was there
the whole time. Yeah. That confuses me.
Yeah. So in the book, basically what's happening is the book wants to the hotel wants to possess somebody in the family, and Danny is too strong, so it goes after Jack, and like a lot of other stuff is happening, like enticing him, convincing him to stay different ways, like leaving little interesting pieces of history here and there. And he starts getting interested in compiling together the history of the hotel. And so he's intrigued. So it's not just the job making him wanting to stay. It's like he finally has a writing project he's interested in. And he's getting more and more drawn into the hotel. And then that also helps blur some of that lines of like, what's ghosts, what's him, like, you know, because he's so entrenched into the reading. And then it's like, oh, I'm here in this full ballroom. And,
okay, that's completely absent from this.
And then near the end, like, basically the hotel has possessed him. And as he's chasing Danny, Danny, like, recognizes that's not his father. And Jack breaks through just long enough to be like, you need to go. He hits himself with the mallet. And Danny points out the boilers are about to burst. Because their pressure is too high. And so that distracts the hotel creature thing because, you know, wants the hotel to stay alive, right? Mm-hmm. So he goes running down to the basement but doesn't make it out in time because Jack, coming out of the trance a little bit, slowed it down.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. So, and in the book, Dick lives.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah.
I hated seeing him die in this.
Yeah, and so I think that you get a little bit more resolution with the book because you do see Jack make that sacrifice for Danny.
He has, like, a redemption, I guess.
You see the evil be defeated, and the evil isn't just Jack or Jack's abusive tendencies or anything like that, but it's the hotel. Mm-hmm. That's evil. So with it exploding, you see that kind of get defeated as well. So I feel like there's a little bit more resolution. I like the spookiness of like, oh, the caretaker has always been a part of the hotel and it doesn't really matter where you go back in history. It's always the same thing. I find that interesting in the movie.
Yeah.
I find that bit of it really like a nice way to wrap it up. But it's a very different ending.
Yeah.
And it has... In a movie that already kind of misses a lot of what makes the book interesting to me, changing the ending just completely changes the whole meaning of the movie to me.
Okay. I can definitely see why some people feel very strongly about this movie then, because it does sound like it's a completely different take on this story.
Yeah.
But I mean, kind of... there are many similarities, but that right there sounded completely different. Like, yeah. We don't get any of that in this.
And that's the thing, is that, like, I watched this movie last night, and like I said, it's been a really long time since I'd either watched the movie or read the book, which I think was a good place for me to come into it at, because I could just kind of appreciate it as the movie for what it is.
Right.
It's really hard not to fill in some of the blanks when you know what they are. Like, so I know a lot more about, like, their family... dynamic. Right. So I don't know how I would feel watching the movie without knowing all of that, because it fills in the gaps for me. But then the other side of that coin is that, like, I know so much more that goes on in the book, so I have to kind of look at them as separate entities. And I still think it holds up really well as a movie. I just also think it tells a different story than the book.
It sounds like it, but I mean, as somebody who hasn't read the book, it sounds like they got the whole family, like the history between them, they're pretty solid just by talking about that one instance of Jack injuring Danny, and then him like talking about him being an alcoholic and no longer, like, he's sober for five months.
And they do a good, they have a good way of like introducing Wendy's dynamic into that too, where she's kind of resigned, I guess, in a way to the marriage, where she's trying to kind of like
find
a way to do the excuse the behavior, I guess. Not really excuse it, but like explain it away.
She does that in the movie for sure.
Yeah.
She doesn't seem as though she's resigned to the marriage, though. She seems like she's actively trying to make it work in the movie, to me at least.
She strikes me as somebody who just wants
to like a
hold on. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not the same as wanting them.
That's true. That's true. Yeah.
It's a safety and coping mechanism. She's doing it
for her and Danny, mostly Danny, probably.
There's the like one trauma response is called fawning, which is where like you overly attempt to people please.
Oh, okay. And she definitely does that. Yeah, you're right. Man, it's so fucking sad.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what? I've had enough space between the two. I really do appreciate the movie for what it is.
Okay, I'm glad that you can do that, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I said, I wouldn't say it's a good adaptation of the book, but I think it's a good movie.
It seemed as though it never attempted to be. Like, yeah. He saw the story in that book, and he's like, okay, I can just do something. I can do my own thing with this. It's like somebody doing the cover, like, of a song.
It's like when you say that this movie is inspired by true events, but it's like, the strangers, like, oh, I heard there was a group that broke into a house.
They had one guy had a bag on his head. Boom. Based on true events. This one right here could have been said based on a real book.
Based on true fiction.
That should have been the tagline.
Can you add that to
the tagline section?
Just no, add it. No, there's going to be too much on the cover art. I was going to say, it'd be fun
I can put it on there.
If you could put a tagline on there based on true fiction.
Yeah. I can do that. Okay. We've got our own taglines.
Yeah. Oh my God. Is that going to have to become a thing? We're going to have to come up with our own taglines?
I think we should.
Oh God. I like it. We've just evolved a little bit, people.
Yeah. Right before our very own eyes and ears. Okay.
All that said, I'm going to bump mine up to an 8.
Bumping it, okay.
Yeah.
I had mine on an 8 before, right?
Yeah.
Keeping mine at an 8. Okay. Erica, what about you? What's that, 10? Oh, okay. Yeah, Erica's staying with a 10.
I doubt she would have changed it if she'd been able to stay with us.
She was very, very solid on that.
So 8.67.
8.67, mm-hmm. Okay.
That's our finishing average. Do you want to know what Talia thought?
I would love to.
Talia wanted to play with her turkey. She was very actively playing with her turkey, mm-hmm. And then she was sleepy, and she was sleep barking.
She got scared during the showers or the bath scene.
Yeah, well, because she's afraid of baths.
Yeah, she's afraid of baths.
Clearly, the scariest part of the movie. Yeah. Baths are obviously an evil place.
It wasn't the woman that turns into an old
because she was in a bath.
Body. Yeah,
the bath is what was the problem. Like,
that's
what
baths do to people. Why do you guys do that willingly? I don't know.
So I think Talia would have given it an 8, but she's removing a point for the. Or no, actually, she's going to give it a point for the bath scene because it was so scary. It was a 9 for her.
Oh wow!
Yeah,
Talia loves this movie.
Yeah. Zoe was distracted by her little Christmas tree bed that we got her.
Yeah,
in the other room. She wanted to be in it.
There's a territory war between the cats for that on right now.
It was a whole thing. Like, so we've got that for them. Zoe initially didn't care about it, so Scout was hogging it, and then one day Zoe decided to get into it while Scout was out, and now Zoe's hogging it, so we set up their little cube and put a bed inside of the cube, and now Zoe wants that, but Scout loves it, and she doesn't want to get out. It's a whole...
We've created a whole thing.
Yeah.
It's
rough. It's a rough life around here, and we've got our actual Christmas tree up, so that's added a whole layer of cat drama. It's...
Oh. it's chaos here, folks. Okay, so are you ready for the review I pulled?
Yes.
Well, I pulled one from the man himself, Stephen King.
Okay.
So, because like I said, we were going to get into this. Obviously, this would have been good for fun facts, but I wanted his review to be read as the review for this. So this is what he has to say. I think The Shining is a beautiful film and it looks terrific. And as I've said before, it's like a big, beautiful Cadillac with no engine inside. In that sense, when it opened, a lot of the reviews weren't very favorable and I was one of those reviewers. I kept my mouth shut at the time, but I didn't care for it much. I feel the same because the character of Jack Torrance has no arc in that movie. Absolutely no arc at all. When we first see Jack Nicholson, he's in the office of Mr. Ullman, the manager of the hotel, and you know then he's crazy as a shithouse rat. All he does is get crazier. In the book, he's a guy who's struggling with his sanity and finally loses it. To me, that's a tragedy. In the movie, there's no tragedy because there's no real change. The other real difference is at the end of my book, the hotel blows up, and at the end of Kubrick's movie, the hotel freezes. That's a difference, but I met Kubrick... And there's no question he's a terrifically smart guy. He's made some of the movies that meant a lot to me, Dr. Strangelove, Paths of Glory. I think he did some terrific things, but boy, he was a really insular man. In the sense that when you met him and when you talked to him, he was able to interact in a perfectly normal way, but you never felt like he was all the way there. He was inside himself. So basically he's like, he was not open to any input from Stephen King, basically. He was very adamant about his own vision of the story, and Stephen King kind of like what you guys were saying, he's just there's all that different stuff there. And I kind of do agree that Jack does not have an arc in this movie. Like, no. That is one of the, like, he does immediately go crazy. Like, day one, he's staring at Wendy and Danny from the house.
I don't like the use of the word crazy.
Okay.
I'm just throwing that out there, just like from a societal aspect. I think we're quick to throw that around. I don't think it's, mental illness is such a hard thing to talk about.
That's fair. I didn't really think that this is concerning mental illness, though. This is like him being possessed by.
Yeah, but I mean, in the book, it is so much of that for Jack Torrance's character, is his mental health is a very precarious thing that he is desperately trying to work on. And then the hotel takes advantage of that.
Okay, I apologize.
Yeah, no, I'm throwing that out because it was in his review too. I didn't like the way he worded that. It's, you know.
Oh, right. Yeah.
But yeah, no, that's kind of what I'm saying, is that, like, I think it's a well done movie. I just don't think it's a good adaptation.
Yeah, I can.
And it can be both.
I can really see hearing what you had to say and what he said, that there's just so much that I don't get.
And also, like, we start off the movie and it sounds like Jack's this great guy who interviewed really well, comes highly recommended. Mm-hmm. What actually happened is that his old drinking buddy pulled some strings and got him the job after he got fired for hitting a student.
Oh.
Yeah.
Damn, man. This guy gets deeper.
Yeah.
Shit.
Yeah, and Ullman knows it when he's interviewing him. And Jack is rude as shit to him during it.
Can I say one thing about Ullman?
Yeah.
The actor. The guy looked like he was about to, like, go on for a game show as a host. Like, like he was like, I gotta go. I'm off to LA to do my stint as
a... Would he be, like, a trivia game show or, like, a word-based game show or just, like, a random...
He's like... He's,
tasks game show.
He is the current host of Family Feud in that time.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
So is he one of those that's like a little bit inappropriate with female contestants?
Very, okay. very inappropriate. He he's not a responsible man.
I'm going to say, I got whatever you want about your opinions of Steve Harvey as a person. Fair, legitimate. I don't know much about him as a person.
He's apparently pretty shitty.
Yeah, but I've read some things. But him as the host of Family Feud, I like.
He's because, enjoyable.
Yeah, he just has over-the-top reactions to the most innocuous things.
It's a
breath of fresh air when you watch some of the older ones, and it's like, oh, cool, you are like an inch away from this woman's boob. And you're kissing her on the mouth. It's weird.
If Steve Harvey was in a different era of hosting, he would probably be one of those people.
Oh, definitely.
But yeah, now he's like a different climate.
Yeah. He's self-awareness. Yeah. He's kept it in check. And I love his over-the-top reactions to things.
Oh, I do too. Yeah. I like how this has devolved into a Family Feud discussion. But yeah. Okay. All right. So... obviously, he doesn't like the movie.
Yeah.
So I don't have a rating from him, but yeah. But let's go on to our listener reviews.
Okay.
So we got a couple here.
Mm-hmm.
First off, we'll go with our Instagram loan review. We have Tucker.
Okay.
He chimes in saying, Nicholson operating at peak Nicholson. Man on bear action. An amazing performance from Shelley Duvall, which may have some unfortunate causes behind its believability. What's not to love? While King has every right to be salty, this is Kubrick at his best. 10 out of 10.
That's a fair review.
That is, like, because it takes into account.
That's essentially what I said.
Yeah, that's what we've been, except, you know, we're not giving it a 10.
Yeah.
There are things that hold it back for me just a tad, but I do think that, Kubrick is amazing at making movies for a reason. He's got, like, the talent for it.
Yeah.
And he had the bones of a good story with Stephen King, and it combined, it's a very, very well-made movie.
It kind of makes you think of, I'm going to draw a modern connection, but like Midsommar, where you've got these long, drawn-out, really beautiful shots that even though they just seem like an establishing shot, there's like a sense of tension to it.
Yeah, definitely. That's what you're saying.
And it's one of those movies that lasts a day and a half.
But you never tell.
But you don't, yeah, it doesn't feel like it lasts that long.
Midsommar moves at like light speed. I don't understand how like we watch that movie and suddenly 3 hours is gone.
Yeah, every time we watch it, like we'll pause for a bathroom break and we'll be like, cool, only 20 minutes has happened and there's been 100 deaths.
Yeah. What the fuck? Yeah, it's crazy. That's kind of how we were too with this movie. We kept pausing and being like, oh my God, how is there so much movie? Because like, it feels like everything already happened.
We started the chase scene and we paused and it was like an hour left. They're doing a chase scene for an hour?
We were halfway through the movie at one point. We paused. I had an hour and 20 minutes left and we're like, oh my God, we have another movie. This movie is long as fuck.
It doesn't feel that long though.
No, it doesn't.
The only reason it feels that long is if you like are a human and need bathroom breaks. And
we had a lot of interruptions.
Yeah, between that and then like it was the pets food time.
Yeah. Okay. Next up over at Twitter. We have Aquile Boobs.
Okay.
Says, what a movie. A slow but steady burn that puts you in the mind of a man slowly being corrupted and going insane. Great performances by all involved and visually mesmerizing to boot. The whole sexy dead woman scene was a trip. I never read the book, but found out later that they made, that the made-for-TV version was more true to the book. I think I prefer that ending of Jack blowing up the whole place, sacrificing himself to save his family. Call me a sap for wanting a happy ending. You know, I think I kind of would have enjoyed that too. But it's a different movie at that point, I think. Because like in this movie, Jack doesn't really seem to have like any redeeming qualities.
Yeah, it took very little for him to become homicidally corrupted. Annoyed with his family.
Yeah, like a ghost being like, wow, your family sucks. You should kill him. He's like, you know what? Yeah, you're right. Kevy Kev says, great movie. I don't understand why it's so divisive with a love it or hate it take by most horror fans. I don't consider it that polarizing. Kubrick is a genius director, though I admit I'm not a fan of his methods. Reminds me of horror's Gordon Ramsay.
I could see how there would be people out there if you read the book and you loved it.
He said, don't expect the book.
Yeah.
But
I'm just saying, like, I can see how that could create a love it or hate it type thing if you can't separate it.
I do that. I mean, it's like Death Note. Like, I mean, that's different, but like it's adapting like a source material that you and I both love. But that take on it, just I didn't care for it. And we talked to Morgan.
Yeah. Morgan. She was like, I loved it. Yeah, she was like, that was a real fun movie. Did you guys watch it? And we're like, well, yeah, but we also really love the anime. And
it's so different. Like, that's another one where the character is like a completely different person.
And it was such a fucking waste of Willem Dafoe.
Yeah.
He was the perfect casting for Yuuk. And
he was. Oh, man. I'm sad
all over again thinking about it.
And I've got somebody one up in him, but Chad just replied to his comments and exactly what Kev said. So double for that one.
Okay.
From Chad and Kev. And that's it. That's the reviews we got.
Okay. There are also people that are just never going to like a movie that's over 2 hours. It could be the best movie in the world and it'd be like too long.
Yeah. And you know, like 2 hours is a lot for some movies. I mean, it's a lot of time to ask of somebody.
Yeah.
Especially ones that are like 3 hours, like Midsommar.
Yeah. And like
this was 2.5 hours.
I mean, you and I have gone back and forth about it, and I'm sure we'll be talking about it soon, but Terrifier 2.
I was thinking about that all night last night.
I'm not bothered by the runtime of it.
I am.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing. Like, it could be cut down. There's a lot of shots that just aren't necessary.
But I feel like they add to the atmosphere same as with this movie.
Yeah.
You could cut it down. I do wonder if we're going to lose some of the tension or, you know. Hi, Talia.
Talia chimed in. She's like, she snorted at Jesse here. So I don't know if that's in agreement or she's on my side.
I mean, she watched the movie with us when we watched it on Screenbox.
That's true. Well, we kind of skipped over our dream sequel. Or no, who do you relate to? We didn't do that. I'll go first. I relate to Danny because of his sweater game. I strive to have those types of sweaters. If I can find that Mickey Mouse sweater, I would get it.
I also relate to Danny, but I don't really want to go into why.
Oh, God.
Okay. We've had a good time here today. We're not going to get heavy.
Okay, we get it. Okay. I'm sorry. You have the floor if you want to, but you don't have to.
No, I mean, like I said, that moment where he goes into the apartment and his dad's awake and it's just that gut punch, like sinking feeling of terror and
Yeah, no, I can imagine that. Yeah, that scene is just it's tense.
Yeah,
and especially with all of like the underlying stuff going on with it.
Yeah.
Okay, do we have a dream sequel?
Oh man. So okay, Mom, don't get mad at me. I still haven't read Doctor Sleep. I want to reread The Shining first, and she was like, "You absolutely don't have to do that." And I was like, "I absolutely do."
Doesn't that like involve Danny, mm-hmm. right? A grown up Danny. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm going into this with absolutely no knowledge. I want like a prequel with like Dick Halloran when he first starts working at the Overlook.
Yeah. I would like to see more of him. Cause like, I feel he is a presence in the movie, but I like this character a lot. I feel like and then when he shows up, he gets killed like right away. Like it just kind of sucks. I wanted more of him.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, like him at the hotel when he first started working there, and then he's like discovering all the things with room 237.
And it ends when the Grady family comes in.
Yeah. Ooh, I like that. Okay, cool.
Okay.
All right. That's all we got for this one.
Oh my God, I can't talk.
What is happening? We need to end this thing before we can't speak ever again. Okay, we currently don't know what next week's movie is. I know. We currently don't know what next week's episode is because we haven't made our schedule yet.
Yeah, we know at some point. So just be sure that you're following us on social media so you can see the schedule.
It's up there on our social media by this point.
Yeah, today is December 1st, so it should be up at some point today.
Yeah. It's your pick next, so it's whatever you want.
Here's the thing, though, is we got to do our Patreon vote for the fifth movie of the
month. Oh, yeah.
But I kind of want my movie to be a New Year's movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Feel like that needs to wait until the end of December.
Okay, that's fair.
Because I want to...
You got to pick... Yeah. You get another pick, though. Well, no, you don't, do
no,
you?
No, if we're doing the Patreon vote.
You're right. Okay.
Yeah, well, the next movie, we'll each pick one. We'll each pick one we want to cover, and we'll throw it up for the budget level patrons to vote between the two.
Yeah. And then, it'll be established there. We'll organize the schedule around that.
Yeah.
And speaking of which, shout out to our patrons who have subscribed. We have
Eric and Vivi of Shaken Not Scared.
We have Joe.
Yes.
Freakatron.
As is his full name.
Mm-hmm. And now we have a new one. We have Amber.
Yeah, who is welcome now in to the club, Amber.
Yes, thank you. Thank you guys so much for supporting us. We really, really appreciate it.
Yeah.
We do have our Stay Alive Patreon episode up. So again, go check that out if you do want to.
Yeah. So what we think we're going to do with that... did I mention that we have to record two more episodes before the end of the weekend?
You may have.
So what we think we're going to do, it's not going to be structured the same as a normal episode because we just don't feel like you guys want to listen to us do the exact same episode again. But we're going to take our notes from that episode, add little additional things since we're going to be watching the unrated version, and then we're going to kind of revisit
it. It's going to be fun, like revisiting the notes that I wrote watching it last year, and then just kind of like being like, wow, okay, like I wonder if I... Yeah. Have the same feelings towards certain scenes. Because I've changed. It's been
I remember when I talked about it over the summer, listening to the Dead Meat podcast cover it. And I was like, oh, they watched the unrated version. It sounds like some scenes are definitely different and just shed some light on it. So I'm really excited to like actually watch the full thing.
I'm really excited too.
So that should be up on our Patreon for your budget level patrons. Mm-hmm. Who also get... voting,
you get to decide our next movie, or not our next movie, but one of the movies this month,
and early access and our notes. Or if you want to be Bughead level, you can get early access and our notes. Mm-hmm. Or if you just want early access
and our drawings,
then you've
got a lot of fun stuff there,
And if you just want early access and just want to show your support, that's always appreciated too. And that's at our Frederick level tier. as always, we just appreciate the talking to you guys and knowing that you all are listening. And we really do believe that every horror movie deserves its love, even if one or both of us hates it. And we understand why some movies are hated, even if one or both of us loves it.
Yeah.
And we think that's important and that we shouldn't be gatekeeping horror because it's been such an instrumental part of our
lives and our relationship, a lot of our friendships, and kind of just our outlook on the world, how we relate to different things. It's really shaped things. It. Yeah.
Yeah.
Erica, where can the people find you?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter, at least for the time being. I am on TikTok. I had to pay a former student to show me how to use it because I am that old. I am apparently 99. I will stay on Instagram, and I am trying out the new ones like Hive and such. But it's all Erica T. Worth, E-R-I-K-A, T, and then W-U-R-T-H. And White Horse is available everywhere. It was a Barnes & Noble editor's pick, an Amazon editor's pick, you know, all the picks. So it is everywhere. It's in USA Today. So yep, you can get it anywhere you could buy a book.
Oh my God. Thank you for coming back, Erica.
Thanks, Erica.
we could do so much shit with this, but I'm not gonna do anything with it.
Yeah, she's nice.
Yeah.
You can always find us on Facebook, Instagram, Least Favorite Scary Movie Podcast, Twitter for now, at Least Fave Pod. We're on TikTok, Least Favorite Scary Movie.
Yeah, Jesse knows it now.
And then we've got our website, which is leastfavoritescarymovie.com. And you can email us at leastfavoritescarymovie@gmail.com or contact us through any of those other social medias.
Yeah, DM us.
DM us?
DM us. DM us. We can't talk. We're losing our ability to speak.
Yeah, we need to go.
And we got to record two more episodes. I can't.
We're going to take a break and watch two more movies and record two more episodes. Okay. That's all.
Thank you guys for being here. Yes,
thank you.
And we will see you guys next week with whatever movie is chosen. We do not know.
Yeah.
But you will know.
Yeah. It'll be fun.
Bye.
Bye. Rad Rom. Rad Rom.